Chapter 20. Questions of Treason. Climbing to the cramped kennels at the very top of the Tarasin Palace, Bethamen held her writing board carefully. Sometimes the ink jar's cork came loose, and ink spots were difficult to remove from clothing. She kept herself as presentable at all times as if she had been called to appear before one of the High Blood. She did not talk to Renna, who had the inspection duty with her today, as they walked up the stairs. They were supposed to be doing an assigned task, not chattering idly. That was part of her reason. Where others jockeyed to be complete with their favorite Damani, and goggled at the strange sights of this land, and speculated on the rewards to be gained here, she focused on her duties, asking for the most difficult Marath Damani to tame to the Idom, working twice as hard and twice as long as anyone else. The rain had stopped, finally, leaving the kennels in silence. The Damani would get some exercise at least today. Most grew sulky if confined to the kennels too long, and these makeshift kennels were decidedly confining. But regrettably, she was not assigned to walking today. Renna never was, though once she had been Suroth's best trainer and well-respected. A little harsh sometimes, but highly skilled. Once everyone had said she would soon be made Dursuldam, in spite of her youth. Matters had changed. There were always more Suldam than Damani, yet no one could recall Renna being complete since Falma, her or Sita, whom Suroth had taken into personal service after Falma. Bethamen enjoyed gossiping over wine about the blood and those who served them as much as anyone else, yet she never ventured any opinion when the talk turned to Renna and Sita. She thought of them often, though. "You start on the other side, Renna," she ordered. "Well? Do you want to be reported to Asanda for laziness yet again?" Before Falma, the shorter woman had been nearly overpowering in her self-assurance, but a muscle twitched in her pale cheek, and she gave Bethamen a sickly, obsequious smile before hurrying into the kennel's warren of narrow passages, patting at her long hair, as though afraid it might be disordered. Everyone except Renna's closest friends bullied her at least a little, repaying her former lofty pride. To do otherwise was to mark yourself out, something Bethamen avoided except in carefully chosen ways. Her own secrets were buried as deeply as she could bury them, and she held silent about the secrets no one knew she was aware of, but she wanted to fix in everyone's mind that Bethamen Ziyami was the image of the perfect Suldam. Absolute perfection was what she strove for, in herself and in the Damani she trained. She set about her inspection briskly and efficiently, checking that the Damani had kept themselves and their individual kennels neat, making a short notation in her neat hand on the top page pinned to the writing board when one had failed to, and she did not dawdle, except to give out hard candies to a few who were doing particularly well in their training. Most of those she had been complete with greeted her entrance with smiles, even as they knelt. Whether from the Empire or from this side of the ocean, they knew she was firm yet fair. Others did not smile. For the most part, the Atha'an Mier Damani met her with stony faces as dark as her own, or sullen anger they seemed to believe they were concealing. She did not mark their anger down for punishment, as some would have. They still thought they were resisting, but unseemly demands for the return of their garish jewelry already were a thing of the past, and they knelt and spoke properly. A new name was a useful tool with the most difficult cases, creating a break with what was done and gone, and they answered to theirs, however reluctantly. Reluctance would fade, along with scowls, and eventually they would hardly remember they ever had other names. It was a familiar pattern, and unfailing as sunrise. Some accepted immediately, and some went into shock at learning what they were. Always there were a handful who gave ground grudgingly over months, while with others one day it was shrieked protests that a terrible mistake had been made, that they could never have failed the tests, and the next day came acceptance and calm. The details differed on this side of the ocean, but here or in the Empire the end result remained the same. For two of the Damani she made notes that had nothing to do with neatness. Zushi, an Atha'an Mier Damani even taller than she herself, was certainly marked for a switching. Her dress was rumpled, her hair uncombed, her bed unmade. But her face was swollen from crying, and no sooner had she knelt than a new set of sobs racked her, tears streaming down her cheeks. The grey dress that had been fitted on her so carefully now hung loosely, and she had not been plump to begin with. Bethamin had named Zushi herself, and she felt a special concern. Unclipping the steel-nibbed pen, she dipped it and wrote a suggestion that Zushi be moved from the palace to somewhere she could be kept in a double kennel with the Damani from the Empire, preferably one experienced in becoming heart friends with newly collared Damani. Sooner or later, that always put an end to tears. She was not sure Suroth would allow it, though. Suroth had claimed these Damani for the Empress, of course. Anyone who owned a tenth so many personally would be suspected of plotting rebellion, or even accused outright. Yet she behaved as though they were her own property. If Suroth disallowed, some other way would have to be found. Bethamin refused to lose a Damani to despondency. She refused to lose a Damani for any reason. The second to receive a special comment was Tessie, and she expected no objections there. The Ilianer Damani knelt gracefully, hands folded at her waist as soon as Bethamin opened the door. Her bed was made, her extra grey dresses hung neatly on their pegs, her brush and comb were laid out precisely on her washstand, and the floor had been swept. Bethamin expected no less. Tessie had been neat from the start. She was fleshing out nicely now that she had learned to clean her plate. Other than treats, Damani's diets were regulated strictly. An unhealthy Damani was a waste. Tessie would never be decked in ribbons and entered in the competitions for the prettiest Damani, though. Her face seemed perpetually angry, even in repose. But today she wore a slight smile that Bethamin was sure had been in place before she entered. Tessie was not one she expected smiles from. Not yet. "How is my little Tessie feeling today?" she asked.
"Tessie do feel very well," the Damani replied smoothly.
Always before she had had to struggle to speak properly, and had earned her latest switching for outright refusal only yesterday. Fingering her chin thoughtfully, Bethamin studied the kneeling Damani. She was suspicious of any Damani who had called herself Aes Sedai. History fascinated her, and she'd even read translations from the myriad of languages that had existed before the consolidation began. Those ancient rulers reveled in their murderous, capricious rule, and delighted in setting down how they came to power, and how they crushed neighboring states and undermined other rulers. Most had died by assassination, often at the hands of their own heirs or followers. She knew very well what Aes Sedai were like.
"Tessie is a good Damani," she murmured warmly, taking one of the hard candies from the twist of paper in her belt pouch.
Tessie leaned forward to receive it and kiss her hand in thanks, but the smile slipped a little, though it was back by the time she stuffed the red candy into her mouth. So, it was like that, was it? Pretending to accept in order to lull the Suldam was not unknown, but given what Tessie had been, very likely she was plotting escape as well. Back out in the narrow hallway, Bethamin wrote a strong suggestion that Tessie's training be redoubled, along with her punishments, and her rewards be made sporadic, so she could never be sure that even perfection would earn so much as a pat on the head. It was a harsh method, one she normally avoided, but for some reason it turned even the most recalcitrant Marath Damani into a supple Damani in a remarkably short time. It also produced the meekest of Damani. She disliked breaking a Damani's spirit, yet Tessie needed to be broken to the Idam so she could forget the past. She would be happier for it, in the end. Finishing ahead of Renna, Bethamin waited at the foot of the stairs until the other Suldam came down. "Take this to Asanda when you take yours," she said, thrusting her writing board at Renna before she cleared the final step. Unsurprisingly, Renna accepted the task as meekly as she had accepted the earlier order, and hurried away eyeing the extra writing board as though wondering whether the pages held a report on her. She was a very different woman than she had been before Falma. Fetching her cloak and leaving the palace, Bethamin intended to return to the inn where she was forced to share a bed with two other Suldam, but only long enough to take some coin from her lockbox. The inspection had been her only duty today, and the rest of the hours were her own. For a change, instead of seeking extra assignments, she would spend them buying souvenirs. Perhaps one of those knives the local women wore at their necks, if she could find one without the gems they seemed to like on the hilt. And lacquerware, of course. That was as good here as any in the Empire, and the designs were so foreign.
It would be soothing to shop. She needed soothing. The paving stones of the Malhara still glistened damply from the morning's rain, and a pleasant tang of salt filled the air, reminding her of the village on the Sea of Lay where she had been born, though the freezing cold made her clutch her cloak around herself. It had never been cold in Abu Nai, and she had never become accustomed to it, no matter how far she had travelled. Thoughts of home were no comfort now, though. As she made her way through the crowded streets, Rena and Sita filled her head to the extent that she bumped into people and once almost walked right in front of a merchant's train of wagons leaving the city. A shout from a wagon driver caught her attention, and she leaped back just in time. The wagon rumbled across the paving stones where she would have been standing, and the woman wielding the whip did not even glance at her. These foreigners had no idea of the respect due a Soldam. Rena and Sita. Everyone who had been at Falma had memories they wanted to forget, memories they would not talk about except when they drank too much. She did, too, only hers were not about the shock of battling half-recognized ghosts out of legend, or the horror of defeat, or mad visions in the sky. How often had she wished she had not gone upstairs that day? If only she had not wondered how Tuli was doing, the Damani who had the marvelous skill with metals. But she had looked into Tuli's kennel, and she had seen Rena and Sita frantically trying to remove Idam from each other's necks, shrieking with the pain, wavering on their knees from the nausea, and still fumbling at the collars. Vomit stained the fronts of their dresses. In their frenzy they had not noticed her backing away, horror-stricken. Not simply horror at seeing two Suldam revealed as Marath Damani, but her own sudden personal terror. Often she thought she could almost see Damani's weaves, and she could always sense a Damani's presence and know how strong she was. Many Suldam could. Everyone knew it came from long experience at handling the Idam. Yet the sight of that desperate pair roused unwanted thoughts, putting a different and frightening complexion on what she had always accepted. Did she almost see the weaves? Or did she really see? Sometimes she thought she felt the channeling, too. Even Suldam had to undergo the yearly testing until their 25th naming day, and she had passed by failing every time. Only there would be a new testing after Rena and Sita were discovered, a new testing to find the Marath Damani who somehow had evaded the first. The Empire itself might tremble before such a blow, and with the image of Rena and Sita burned into her brain, she had known with total certainty that after those tests, Bethamin Ziami would no longer be a respected citizen. Instead, a Damani called Bethamin would serve the Empire. The shame curdled in her still. She had placed personal fears ahead of the needs of the Empire, ahead of everything she knew to be right and true and good. Battle came to Falma and nightmare, but she had not rushed to complete herself with a Damani and join the battle line. Instead, she had used the confusion to secure a horse and flee, to run as hard and as far as she could. She realized she had stopped, staring into a seamstress's shop window without really seeing what was on display inside. Not that she wanted to see. The blue dress with its lightning-marked red panels was the only one she had thought of wearing in years, and certainly she would not wear something that exposed her so indecently. Skirts swirling about her ankles, she walked on, but she could not shake Rena and Sita from her thoughts. Or Suroth. Obviously Alwyn had found the collared pair of Suldam and reported them to Suroth, and Suroth had sheltered the Empire by protecting Rena and Sita, dangerous as that was. What if they suddenly began channeling? Better perhaps for the Empire if she had arranged their deaths, though killing a Suldam was murder, even for the high blood. Two suspicious deaths among the Suldam would certainly have brought in seekers. So Rena and Sita were free, if it could be called that, when they were never allowed to be complete. Alwyn had done her duty and been honored by becoming Suroth's voice. Suroth had done her duty as well, however distasteful. There was no new testing. Her own flight had been for nothing. And if she had remained, she would not have ended up in Tanchico, a nightmare she wanted to forget even more than she did Falma. A squad of the Death Watch guards marched by, resplendent in their armor, and Bethamin paused to watch them pass. They left a wake through the crowd like a great ship under full sail. There would be joy in the city, in the land, when Tuan finally revealed herself, and celebrations as though she had just arrived. She felt a guilty pleasure at thinking of the Daughter of the Nine Moons so, as when she had done something forbidden as a child, though, of course, until Tuon removed her veil, she was merely the High Lady Tuon, no higher than Suroth. The Death Watch guards tramped on, dedicated heart and soul to Empress and Empire, and Bethamon went in the opposite direction. Appropriately, since she was dedicated heart and soul to preserving her own freedom. The Golden Swans of Heaven was a grand name for a tiny inn squeezed between a public stable and a lacquerware shop. The lacquerware shop was full of military officers buying everything the shop contained. The stable was full of horses purchased in the lottery and not yet assigned, and the Golden Swans was full of Suldam, packed with them, in fact, at least once night came. Bethamon was lucky to have only two bedmates. Ordered to accommodate as many as she could, the innkeeper pushed four and five into a bed when she thought they would fit. Still, the bedding was clean and the food quite good, if peculiar. And given that the alternative was likely a hayloft, she was glad to share. At this hour, the round tables in the common room were empty. Some of the Suldam living there surely had duties, and the rest simply wanted to avoid the innkeeper. Arms folded, frowning, Darnella Shoran was watching several serving women sweep the green-tiled floor industriously. A skinny woman with gray hair worn rolled on the nape of her neck and a long jaw that gave her a belligerent appearance, she might have been a Dursuldam in spite of the ridiculous knife she wore, its hilt studded with cheap red and white gems. Supposedly the serving women were free, but they jumped like property whenever the innkeeper spoke. Bethamon jumped slightly herself when the woman rounded on her.
"You are aware of my rules concerning men, Mistress Ziami?" she demanded.
After all this time, the slow way these people talked still sounded odd.
"I've heard about your foreign ways, and if that is how you are, it is your business, but not under my roof. If you want to meet with men, you will do it elsewhere."
"I assure you I have not been meeting men here or anywhere else, Mistress Shoran." The innkeeper frowned at her in suspicion.
"Well, he came around asking for you by name. A pretty yellow-haired man. Not a boy, but not very old either. One of your lot, dragging his words out so you could hardly understand him."
Making her tone placating, Bethamon did her best to convince the woman that she did not know anyone who met that description, and that she had no time for men with her duties. Both were true, yet she would have lied if necessary. The Golden Swans had not been commandeered, and three in a bed was much preferable to a hayloft. She tried to find out whether the woman might like some small gift when she went shopping, but the woman actually seemed offended when she suggested a knife with more colorful gems. She had not meant anything expensive, nothing in the way of a bribe. Not really. Yet Mistress Shoran seemed to take it so, huffing and frowning indignantly. In any case, she was not sure she succeeded in changing the woman's mind by a hair. For some reason, the innkeeper seemed to believe they spent all their free hours engaged in debauchery. She was still frowning when Bethamon started up the railless stairs at the side of the common room, pretending that she had not a thought in her mind beyond shopping. The man's identity did concern her, though. She certainly did not recognize the description. In all likelihood, he had come about her inquiries, but if that was the case, if he had been able to trace her here, then she had been insufficiently discreet. Perhaps dangerously so. Still, she hoped he came back. She needed to know. She needed to. Opening the door to her room, she froze. Impossibly, her iron lockbox sat on the bed with its lid thrown open. That was a very good lock, and the only key lay at the bottom of her belt pouch. The thief was still there, and oddly he was thumbing through her diary. How in the light had the man gotten past Mistress Shoran's surveillance? Paralysis lasted only an instant. Snatching her belt knife from its sheath, she opened her mouth to scream for help. The fellow's expression never changed, and he neither tried to run nor to attack her. He just took something small from his pouch and held it up where she could see it, and her breath turned to lead in her throat. Numbly she fumbled her knife back into its scabbard and held out her hands to show him she held no weapon and was not attempting to reach one. Between his fingers was a gold-edged ivory plaque, engraved with a raven and a tower. Suddenly she really saw the man, yellow-haired and in his middle years. Perhaps he was pretty, as Mistress Shoran had said, but only a madwoman would think of a seeker for truth in that fashion. Thank the light she had not recorded anything dangerous in her diary, but he must know. He had asked for her by name. Oh, light, he must know. "Close the door," he said quietly, returning the plaque to his pouch, and she obeyed. She wanted to run. She wanted to plead for mercy. But he was a seeker, so she stood there, trembling. To her surprise, he dropped her diary back into the lockbox and gestured to the room's single chair.
"Sit. There is no need for you to be uncomfortable."
Slowly she hung up her cloak and settled onto the chair, for once not caring how uncomfortable the strange ladder-like back was. She did not try to hide her shivers. Even one of the high blood might quake at being questioned by a seeker. She had a small hope. He had not simply ordered her to accompany him. Perhaps he did not know, after all.
"You have been asking questions about a ship captain named Eginan Sarna," he said. "Why?"
Hope faltered with a thud she could feel in her chest. "I was looking for an old friend," she quavered. The best lies always contained as much truth as possible. "We were at Falma together. I don't know whether she survived."
Lying to a seeker was treason, but she had committed her first treason in deserting during the battle at Falma. "She lives," he said curtly.
He sat down on the end of the bed without taking his eyes from her. They were blue and made her want her cloak back.
"She is a hero, a captain of the Green, and the Lady Eginan Tamarath now. Her reward from the High Lady Suroth. She is also here in Ebudar. You will renew your friendship with her, and report to me who she sees, where she goes, what she says, everything."
Bethamon clamped her jaws to keep from laughing hysterically. He was after Eginan, not her. The light be praised. The light be praised in all its infinite mercy. She had only wanted to know if the woman still lived, if she had to take precautions. Eginan had freed her once, yet in the 10 years Bethamon had known her before that, she had been a model of duty. It had always seemed possible she would repent that one aberration, no matter the cost to herself, but wonder of wonders, she had not. And the seeker was after her, not... Possibilities reared up in front of her, certainties, and she no longer wanted to laugh. Instead, she licked her lips.
How can I renew our friendship?
It had never been friendship anyway, merely acquaintance, but it was too late to say that now.
You tell me she's been raised to the blood. Any overture must come from her.
Fear emboldened her, and panicked her as it had at Falma.
Why do you need me to be your listener? You can take her for questioning any time you decide to.
She bit the inside of her cheek to still her tongue. Light, she wanted nothing less than she wanted him to do that. Seekers were the secret hand of the Empress, might she live forever. In the Empress's name he could put even Suroth to the question, or Tuon herself. True, he would die horribly if it turned out he had been in error, but the risk was small with Eginan. She was only of the low blood. If he put Eginan to the question... To her shock, rather than simply telling her to obey, he sat studying her.
"I will explain certain things," he said, and that was a greater shock.
Seekers never explained, so she had heard.
"You are no use to me or the Empire unless you survive, and you will not survive if you fail to understand what you face. If you reveal a word of what I tell you to anyone, you will dream of the Tower of the Ravens as a respite from where you will find yourself. Listen and learn. Eginan was sent to Tanchico before the city fell to us, among other things as part of the effort to find Suldam who had been left behind at Falma. Strangely, she found none, though others did, like those who aided your own return. Instead, Eginan murdered the Suldam she found. I put the charge to her myself, and she did not bother denying it. She did not even show outrage or even indignation. As bad, she consorted in secret with Aes Sedai."
He said the name flatly, not with the normal disgust, but rather like an accusation. When she departed Tanchico, she was traveling on a ship commanded by a man named Bael Domon. He made some disturbance at having his ship boarded and was made property. She bought him and immediately made him Sojin, so plainly he is of some importance to her. Interestingly, she had brought the same man to the High Lord Turak in Falma. Domon engaged the High Lord's regard to the extent that the fellow was often invited to converse with him. He grimaced. Do you have wine or brandy?
Bethamon gave a start. Iona has a flask of the local brandy, I think. It's a rough drink.
He ordered her to pour him a cup anyway, and she obeyed hurriedly. She wanted to keep him talking, anything to delay the inevitable. She knew for a fact that Aginan had not been killing Suldam, yet her proof would condemn her to share Renna and Sita's sour fate, if she was lucky, if this seeker saw his duty to the Empire as Suroth had. He peered into the pewter cup, swirling the dark apple brandy while she took her seat again.
"The High Lord Turak was a great man," he murmured. "Perhaps one of the greatest the Empire has ever seen. A pity his Sojin decided to follow him into death. Honorable of them, but it makes it impossible to be sure Domon was in the band that murdered the High Lord."
Bethamon flinched. Sometimes the blood died at one another's hands, of course, but the word murder was never mentioned. The Seeker continued, still peering into his cup without drinking.
"The High Lord had ordered me to watch Suroth. He suspected she was a danger to the Empire itself. His own words, and with his death, she managed to gain command of the Forerunners. I have no evidence that she ordered his death, but there is much that is suggestive. Suroth brought a Damani to Falma, a young woman who was Aes Sedai."
Again, the name was flat and hard.
"And who somehow escaped the very day that Turak died.
Suroth also has a Damani in her entourage who was once Aes Sedai. She has never been seen uncollared, but..." He shrugged, as though that were a thing of no moment. Bethamon's eyes popped. Who would uncollar a Damani? A well-trained Damani was a treat and a joy, but as well unleash a drunken Grolm.
"It seems very likely she has a Marath Damani hidden among her property, too," he went on, just as if he were not listing crimes little lower than treason. "I believe Suroth gave the order for Suldam, who managed to reach Tanchico, to be killed, perhaps in order to hide Aginan's meetings with Aes Sedai. You, Suldam, always say you can tell a Marath Damani at sight, correct?"
He looked up suddenly, and somehow she managed to meet those frozen eyes with a smile. His face could have belonged to any man, but those eyes. She was glad to be seated. Her knees were shaking so hard she was surprised it did not show through her skirts. "It is not quite that easy, I'm afraid." She almost succeeded in keeping her voice steady. Surely you know enough to charge Suroth with the High Lord Turak's murder? If he took Suroth, there would be no need to involve her or Aginan.
Turak was a great man, but my duty is to the Empress. May she live forever, and through her to the Empire.
He drank the brandy down in one long swallow, and his face became as hard as his voice.
Turak's death is dust beside the danger facing the Empire. The Aes Sedai of these lands seek power in the Empire, a return to the days of chaos and murder when no man could close his eyes at night knowing he would wake, and they are aided by a venomous worm of treachery boring from within. Suroth may not even be that worm's head. For the Empire's sake, I dare not take her until I can kill the whole worm. Aginan is a thread I can follow to the worm, and you are a thread to Aginan. So you will renew your friendship with her, whatever it takes. Do you understand me?"
"I understand, and I will obey."
Her voice shook, but what else could she say? The lights save her, what else could she say?